Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head! That's not love! That's 3 feet above your ass!
People will come, Ray.
All right, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Hell yeah. Thank you for joining us once again.
Thank you.
Adam Nelson.
And I'm Samuel Paul. Spring has sprung. Pitchers and catchers have reported.
Thank God.
Oh my God. Baseball season is starting. I'm so excited. I can't hardly stand it.
Oof.
If you're out there listening to us, thank you so much. And please do write us and let you know what you think so far at
baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. On today's show, we will be discussing recent transactions, projected lineups, whether average age of a ball club makes a difference, the new Bronx Bombers, and this year's Pecota projections, and of course, the answer to last week's trivia question, and maybe a new one coming your way this week. Please remember to contact us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com, Facebook.
Yes, you can contact me directly at s.paulradio, and like and follow us at West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast at Facebook.
Also, the Podomatic website, podomatic.com/podcast/mostly baseball. I forgot that. West Coast Bias. There we go.
Forgetting the name of the show, this is not good.
We need your help. We need your help. But let's reach into our mailbag from this week. We got Frank in Gardena.
Frank
says, I am pretty excited to see Ohtani, even though I'm not an Angel fan. Go Dodgers. Oh, okay. Thank you, Frank. But I am confused on how he will be used in fantasy. How will he be getting batting stats? I don't know. This is all messed up. When no other pitcher does. Well, I think I know what he means. That's a great question.
It really is, and Frank, you're not alone there. A lot of us have very similar questions regarding the same subject.
Right. Yeah, I was wondering this myself too, and I think for each platform, each website, it's going to be different. I guess there are a couple options. The first option is, I guess he's eligible to simultaneously accumulate hitting and pitching stats. I don't know. It's going to be really weird on the platforms, and then it also seems a little unfair for other pitchers like Zach Greinke or Madison Bumgarner, who do provide some support throughout the season and are pretty good hitting pitchers who would, you would probably like to have those stats. So that doesn't really seem fair. I guess a second option might be Ohtani is eligible as a pitcher only, just a pitcher, no hitting stats whatsoever. But then that's sort of selling him short a little bit as a player, because he's obviously not just that. There could be a multi-position eligibility as a starting pitcher and utility hitter. But I think this is what Yahoo is doing, and this seems like the most viable option. Ohtani will be two separate guys, so there will be a pitcher Ohtani and a batter Ohtani. So one team might have him as a batter, one team might have him as a pitcher. I guess that's probably the only way to do it. Sorry, Frank, just check your rules on ESPN, CBS, Yahoo, whatever you use. I'm sure they by now have already figured that out. It looks like Yahoo is going to be doing the two Ohtanis, which I guess that makes sense.
It does on one level. It'll be interesting to see what actually happens during the season if he really does mash major league hitting, which people are doubting that he can.
He has pop. His average is good. It's not great, but he does have signs of pop. So, but it is true. It's a totally different game. You know, it's a bigger baseball. So pitching might be a little bit different. But maybe bigger baseball might be good for him in a pitch in a batting sense. You know,
it's a slight difference. It's also being thrown harder than it ever was in Japan as well.
That's true. Yeah,
there's not too many Japanese pitchers who can match the velocity of a lot of the pitchers
MLB pitcher. But you know, a lot of the pitchers in Japan are just filthy, go into the dirt, you know, a lot of splitters, so he's probably gonna be seeing a lot more balls in the zone,
more fastballs probably too.
Yeah, so you know, it'll be interesting to see. I have a Mike Socha on Ohtani, just, you know, spring training, everybody's showing up. Pitchers and catchers report. Here's Socha on Ohtani.
He's a special athlete, and he's had great success in playing in Japan, running the bases, and doing things that a position player needs to do to try to get himself in position to score a run. So he has a great stride. He's got tremendous speed. He can steal a base. There's a lot of things he can do. So if he's out there, he's going to play baseball. He's still developing for sure. There's things that he needs to grow in, to grow with, as far as his game evolving to the major league level. Part of it's going to be stamina pitching. Part of it's going to be, you know, getting used to the league hitting wise. Part of it is, 23. You know, he should be reaching his full maturity, but you know, your bodies are still developing. So there's a lot of things a lot of factors that are part of it. He's young. We've got a bunch of guys that are 23 and under in that room. And the only thing that Shohei brings with him is a lot more experience of playing in a very, very high level over in Japan, a high level of baseball, and a uniqueness of swinging the bat and having the stuff to be a frontline starter.
You know, Socha brought up a good point, and that's Ohtani's used to pitching once a week, right? Every sixth day, and which is how they all do it in Japan.
Is it sixth or seventh day?
Seventh day, yeah. Well, it's once a week, so I don't know. Maybe they have routine days off there. But Socha has already said that the Angels are going to be running a six-man rotation. And, I mean, it's good for Ohtani, I guess. It makes sense to ease him into it. But how is this going to affect the rest of the staff, the rest of the pitching staff who are not used to doing that? Do you think, in terms of their game, is it going to affect them? And then also attitude mentally toward, who's this new guy's coming in, he's changing our whole routine, you know, clubhouse dynamic. I don't know,
in terms of clubhouse dynamic and the other pitchers, you know, winning cures all. So this guy is good, he gets the outs, he gets the innings, and he does well, no one's gonna care in that respect.
Forgiven. That's true.
As far as the other pitchers on a new schedule, there's a couple different schools of thoughts. Of course, six-man rotation is not a completely new idea in terms of baseball.
It's been done in the past, in the recent past, sure, but it's usually because of injuries, or it's usually because they're nursing guys.
Pitcher needs an extra day off here and there. They'll put in someone else as a spot start.
The Mets, that's what I think of a lot, you know.
Sure, different teams Syndergaard. For different reasons and different things. But at a certain point, Major League Baseball went from a four-man rotation to a five-man rotation. Right. I'm sure there were similar discussions then. I don't see how necessarily an extra day of rest for the entire staff would be a bad thing throughout the season, except maybe as a mental readiness standpoint.
Right.
But
and physically, I mean, are their bodies going to adapt? I'm talking about the other pitchers.
No,
other
I know you're talking about.
I'm just talking about, you know.
But an extra day of rest, I don't think would matter too much. The other question, though, is that it's not just the pitchers that this is going to affect. It also affect the bench and the bench players. There will be one less person on the bench to come off the bench. Or there'll be one less person in the bullpen.
Mm-hmm.
Will starters maybe come into a game during that extra day to as a reliever?
As a reliever. Well, I mean, right.
These guys throw on the side every week.
Yeah,
and do bullpen sessions and everything. So it's not like they're totally just like idle during their off days.
It's true, but there's a difference between a simulated game and a bullpen session and actual game.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just physically draining because you are putting everything behind every pitch. But, you know, I don't know. It is interesting to think about. And again, this is assuming this is all best case scenario, right? This is Socha assuming that these guys that he had last year who... Angels recorded 19 outs only 39 times last year. Their starters have been plagued with injury. I know they've had a pretty long off season. Maybe they're all ready to go. I don't know. I mean, it seems almost like a pipe dream that they'll have six starters throughout the entire season. So we'll see. And again, if Ohtani can prove himself, then maybe he can go every fifth day. I mean, that's what happened with Kenta Maeda, with the Dodgers. I mean, a lot of these Japanese pitchers, you give them an extra day for the first maybe few months of the season, but I don't know.
Sure, at a certain point, you have to adapt. I mean, this is what college kids go through as they come up through the minor leagues or they get signed and maybe there's some sort of phenom go right to the major leagues. They go from college schedule, not nearly as many games, not nearly as many innings, and they've got to develop, they've got to work, they've got to adapt to the new, more rigorous schedule that is 24 weeks of baseball.
Yeah, and the Angels do have, they do say they're confident with nine men starting the season. I think it's more like eight, but got Garrett Richards, Andrew Heaney, Matt Shoemaker, Tyler Skaggs, Ohtani, of course, J.C. Ramirez, Nick Tropiano, Parker Bridwell, and maybe Jaime Barria. Maybe. We'll see. He's yet to debut. He could be the sixth. So, again, I mean, you know, whether or not this is a legitimate thing remains to be seen. But, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. And, I mean, more to Frank's point, how would this affect us in a fantasy sense? Now, I was excited for a while thinking about him in a fantasy format, but now not so much. You know, now I'm thinking I might just stay away, because what you ran the numbers, you were thinking he might get three DH days a week, which sounds about right. That's almost, you know, that's probably max, and then
72
one day
games
pitching
is probably right around 250 at bats. Is that enough to really make that much of a difference in a fantasy context?
I don't think it is.
And then as a pitcher, only 15 starts is what they're saying.
Right, they're saying maybe 140 innings for him. Which, I mean, yeah, fantasy wise.
Is this a wait and see for him, or do you pick him up just on the off chance?
Well, can't wait and see. He's going to get picked up. Some, you know, he's going to be on a team by the end of the draft, no matter what. So he's not going to be a free agent on any draft. I can't, even if you have a 19 or 18 league, I can't imagine he's going to be.
Does it go in the top three rounds? First three rounds.
See, that's tough. That's tough. I think he might in a lot of leagues, but again, I want to be a little more conservative on this, because, or who knows, maybe you just get him as a pitcher, you hope for the best, maybe he's great the first half of the season, and then the second half they start pulling his starts a little bit more. I don't know.
All the sources that I've seen and heard have said that he's far more valuable as a pitcher than a hitter.
Right.
That's, of course, speculation.
Right. Well, because he's going to be used more as a pitcher.
Well, sure, but what if the opposite is true? What happens if he just gets shelled as a pitcher?
Oh, no,
but mashes as a hitter and proves that he not only can hit major league pitching, but he can hit major league hitting hard.
That'd be cool.
How does that change the outlook for Ohtani going forward? Do they scrap him as a pitcher, throw him in the outfield, and use him as this amazing hitter?
Yeah. Ooh,
maybe do a spot start here and there if they need it. Mm-hmm. Or
no, I'm thinking if he starts raking at the plate, they start taking away starts, maybe put him in the bullpen every once in a while, you know? Because, I mean, the guy's got gas. The guy throws hard. Right. And so maybe you don't want to blow out his arm, so you bring him in the bullpen three games a week, and you start him every day. Or I guess you couldn't start him every day.
But, well, you start him in the field every day.
That's interesting.
You start him in the field, you need a pitcher, you do a double switch, your right fielder comes in to pitch Ohtani, and a new right fielder goes out there.
Right.
Is that
Travis Wood? Is that? Right. This is, again, assuming Albert Pujols can play first base again for 100 games. What did he do, 20 games last year? So that's a big DH spot right there that's gone, which Ohtani will have to fill. So right now it's looking the Angels' potential starting lineup, and it looks good. Ian Kinsler leading off. We got Trout hitting second. Upton hitting third. Pujols cleanup. Cole Calhoun. Then Cozart. Then Ohtani. It's looking like Ohtani's probably going to be in the seven hole for a long time. Or at least, maybe not a long time. If he gets a home run in his first game, we'll see what happens. But and then Angelton Simmons in eight. That's a nasty lineup.
Yeah, that's not a bad lineup at all. The Angels for the last couple of years that they've been missing is the pitching. You know, they're in a tough division, obviously, with the defending world champions this year. And
the West is probably spoken for, but the wild card is still up for grabs. And we talked a little bit about that last week. It seems like it'll be the Red Sox, but who knows, you know. So long story longer, I don't know. Fantasy-wise, we'll have to just wait and see. But I wouldn't buy too high. I would wait a little while. And if you don't get him, well, you don't get him. You know, let somebody else be the guinea pig. Or if you're a gambler, go for it. Just take him and see what happens. I don't know. I don't know. But it'll be interesting to see. And I'm excited to see if he can actually hit the ball. There's not a lot of Japanese batters who can come in and do what Ichiro did, or even what Matsui seemed to do for a good long time.
Good hitter is a good hitter, and no matter what country you're from.
Speaking of Southern California, looks like Matt Kemp is staying. It seemed like they were just going to use him as a trade chip, but unsurprisingly, no one has agreed to take on the $43.5 million still owed to him. So if he gets any playing time, it'll most likely be platooning with Jock Peterson until Andrew Tolles gets back. He tore his ACL about 9 months ago. Hmm. Andrew Tolles was just killing it for so long, for a year and a month. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. I mean, that's a big question mark. Rumor is Kemp has dropped 40 pounds and counting. They say maybe even 50. I still haven't seen a picture of him yet. Guy didn't look like he even had 50 pounds to lose. I mean, he is, you know, he's got a lot of weight in his midsection. He's got hip problems. That's his big thing. So he's definitely not a plus defender anymore. But who knows? Maybe he dropped 50 pounds. He's a little more fleet-footed. We know he's got an arm. Stick him in left and see what happens. I don't know. That's exciting.
By all accounts, he is happy to be a Dodger again. And
well, can you blame him? Well, maybe you can, but I will defer to the better judgment of our listeners right now. It's great to wear blue.
It's you know, if I was offered a contract by the Dodgers to play, I don't know that I would turn them down just because I am a Giants fan. But Yeah, no, I don't blame him for wanting to be a Dodger again. Retiring as a Dodger means something. He made a name for himself as a Dodger. He was a great player for a Dodger for a number of years.
Should have won MVP. Ryan Braun stole it from him. That was a garbage deal. And then, of course, a month later, he tests positive for... Anyway, I'm not going to go back into that. Matt Kemp, you are still the MVP in my book. We got another old veteran coming back to Dodger Blue. Chase Utley had cleats and packages with his name in his locker room in Camelback Ranch before there was ever a signing. But it is official now. He agrees to a 2-year deal for $2 million, which seems very modest nowadays. 2-year, $2 million. But I think that's a great pickup again to get Utley back. I mean, the guy is 39, and I'm sure he'll have limited playing time. But his presence on and off the field is priceless. I mean...
Sure.
And he's great off the bench.
Seasoned veteran.
Yeah, he's hitting .280 off the bench last year. You know, he's great in high-pressure situations. And he watches pitchers better than anybody. You know, I mean, he was the best second baseman for years when he was at the top of his game. He knows what's going on. He's stared at pitchers his entire life. And he can help the guys, you know, the younger guys throughout the game. Hey, I saw this. I saw that. He's doing this. He's tipping this. You know, I mean, in that sense, he is like probably a pitching savant, which is great. So I think, you know, even if he bats .220, whatever, who cares? That's good. It's a good pickup just to have him there. I wouldn't be surprised to see him maybe as like a bench coach in the next 10 years or so. Who knows? You know?
Yeah, it's quite possible.
Yeah.
Maybe even towards the end of his this 2-year deal with the Dodgers, he'll end up
being
more of a bench coach than he is a player.
You remember Nomar? Toward the end of Nomar finished as a Dodger, and he was player manager for a little while, a couple games toward the end of the season there, and I thought we'd see him more. Now he does commentary for Dodgers away games, which is great. You know, he's good. But it's good to see old man Utt coming back. Plus, you know, if you ever need to take a guy out, you just send in the Bruiser Utley, and he'll break a guy's leg for you. We also have some new managers. I know the news, for the most part, came out last year, but hasn't been much talked about them. But now's the time. So, Ron Gardenhire to Detroit. Now, he's got a lot of experience. He has over 2,000 games managed in the major leagues. But there are five other guys. Alex Cora, Mickey Callaway, Gabe Kapler, Dave Martinez, Aaron Boone. Zero Major League Baseball managing games. Zero. So it's going to be a totally different game. Alex Cora, he's the former bench coach for the Houston Astros. I mean, he just won a World Series, and now he's going to be the Boston Red Sox manager. You know, that'll be interesting to see. I mean, what kind of secrets does he know? He's from American League to American League. That seems pretty crazy. I believe he got the job in October during the World Series. So he still went, you know, I think he found out before Game 6 of the World Series or something, because he was interviewing for the job. Anyway, he's the new Red Sox manager. We got Mickey Callaway from the new Mets manager. He was a pitching coach for the Indians for 5 seasons. American League to National League, you know, it's probably not going to be the huge advantage there, but just seeing these guys like with zero head managing experience coming over, it makes sense for Alex Cora as a bench coach. I mean, they're right there. It's almost like he understands the pressure. He gets how the game is moving. He won't be afraid to make a high impact decision in a high leverage situation. But Gabe Kapler, he was formerly with the Dodgers. Dave Martinez now with the Nationals, and Aaron Boone with the Yankees. I don't know.
That would be an interesting year in terms of the new managers. Do you think there is a advantage of taking someone with zero managerial experience that over someone who has worked their way up through, say, the minor league system, or was a bench or base coach for a number of years before becoming a manager?
I don't think there's an advantage. I think there's probably a disadvantage in that sense. The only good thing would be a guy like Aaron Boone or even Alex Cora. Like, they're still young, and guys can relate to them. So in that sense, yeah. But Alex Cora does have a good amount of experience. Boone, not so much. But he is young, and he could speak the language with these guys, you know. So if that's what you mean, then yeah. But otherwise, I can't see there being any advantage to a manager not having any experience.
My head goes immediately back to 2001. I think it was 2001, 2000 year. It was 2001 when the Diamondbacks beat the Yankees in the World Series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The manager for the Diamondbacks was Brenly. Bob Brenly,
right.
Who I don't believe had any managerial experience before he did that. He was in the broadcast booth. He was a catcher for the Giants for many years. He did very, very well. Very well.
Yeah, definitely. Especially being a catcher, that helps because you're calling the game throughout your entire career. Sure. So.
Mike Socha has that too. I mean, he's right. Been now... He's
Joe Torre, Socha, sure. Oh, yeah. Socha's doing great. It's usually pitchers or catchers, right, that usually do it. So we'll see with Aaron Boone. I don't know. You know, he wasn't a catcher. He wasn't a pitcher.
He's a third baseman.
Right. I'm kind of excited to see Alex Cora because Alex Cora's got a little fire under him, and I think he'll probably fit in pretty well in Boston. I think he'll fight back if people start talking trash on him, you know what I mean? I don't know. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Any trade rumors you got going for me? Anything bubbling?
I did run across one trade rumor. It sparked my interest. It was involving the Giants and the Mets. Hmm. Joe Panik for Juan Lagares. Talking the straight up trade. It makes sense on the surface. Seems from what I read that the Mets are a little bit hesitant on that, pulling the trigger, just because their own outfield situation, it's unclear about what their depth looks like. Also, Giants probably want a little bit more than Lagares for their youngest player at this point.
That's right.
and an all-star Giants second baseman to boot.
Giants are a little old, a little long in the tooth this year.
It would seem so.
But the Mets, you know, I could see them maybe going there because Lagares is technically on the bench as long as Conforto is healthy and comes off, which I'm sure he probably will be. Lagares is a good backup outfielder to have, but the Giants could really use him so they don't have to use Austin Jackson every day. That seems to make a lot of sense. But so they're talking about a one-for-one trade? Is that what you were talking about?
That's what I read, is that what was on the being discussed, considered either internally by the Mets or official talks at all with the Giants, I don't know, was that it would be a straight-up trade.
That makes sense. I mean, look, the Giants could use an everyday center fielder, maybe platoon Austin Jackson with lefties. But, yeah, because right now they have Conforto. And Lagares isn't going to be getting any playing time if Conforto is healthy. They got Cespedes and Jay Bruce. So their outfield is pretty good. But that does lead me to, you know, look at the age of the Giants coming into this season. It looks like they're going to be the oldest. The projected average age of their roster will be 28.2. Which, you know, isn't crazy, but...
It's not old.
After April 20th, when Brandon Belt has a birthday, the Giants could field an everyday lineup in which just one player, second baseman, Joe Panik, will be still be in his 20s. So everybody will be in their 30s.
Right.
You know, it's... They're younger than they were 2 years ago, when their average age was 29.8, 2016. You know... I don't know. It's what are your thoughts as a Giants fan? Because I don't really have an opinion on this, except for the bunch of old men out there making a fool of themselves. No, I think they'll be all right.
It'd be interesting to watch. I don't think that an average age of, let's just say, 29 is old by any means. Most of these guys, Buster Posey's just turning 31.
31. Crawford turned 31 in January. Right.
Right. So these guys, they're entering probably the peak of their prime and start to...
You better hope so.
what it means, it's their youngest years unquestionably behind them. Whether or not their best years are behind them, it's hard to tell. Many players had a history of having great years in years 31
Willie
and 32.
Willie Stargell, Frank Robinson, sure. Oh, yeah. Some of their best years in their 30s, yeah.
So it's not over. The window may be closing a little bit for the Giants. I think they will have to address that in the next 1 to 2 seasons for sure. But they're... I don't believe they're truly as bad as their record indicated last year. I think they had a lot. They had a lot go wrong. Had a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
They had a lot of unforeseen circumstances that affected performance throughout the year, and they really are built to be and are quite a bit better than 94 losses last year.
Maybe if Bumgarner wasn't 28 years old, maybe if he was in his 30s, he wouldn't be riding that ATV or whatever that he fell off of and broke his damn arm.
That could be true. Cueto will be, and Johnny Cueto will be less distracted to start this season as well.
Right, yeah, there wouldn't be such a big burden on his shoulders. But you know, do you remember the 1983 Phillies?
The 1983 Phillies.
They acquired 39-year-old Joe Morgan. And 40-year-old Tony Perez to go along with 41-year-old Pete Rose and 40-year-old Ron Reed, 38-year-old Steve Carlton, and 38-year-old Tug McGraw.
An old-timers game.
And by the way, they won the pennant that year. So, you know, yeah, it's possible. I mean, those guys are some of the best. But, you know, McCutcheon and Longoria are some of the best of their generation, too. So it's not completely out of the question. So we'll see. And McCutcheon was talking about how he always hated playing at AT&T Park because everybody would call him a bum. But now he's excited to be playing out there. You know, wearing
he won't get the famous chant comes from the Polo Grounds.
What's the chant?
The chant. Well, someone out there yells, "What's wrong with Adam Nelson?" And everyone else in uniform yells, "He's a bum." That's the chant. You'll hear the "he's a bum" occasionally when listening to Giants radio broadcasts. And that chant originated way back in the early part of last century in the Polo Grounds. That was that was the chant that
Dodgers were dem bums. Maybe most probably
having to do with the Dodgers, of course, the crosstown rivals at that time. Now the cross state rivals here, the Brooklyn Bums, absolutely. But it was being called a bum back in the early days of baseball was a big insult. No one wanted to be a bum. Everyone wanted to be, you know, bum was someone who just wasn't very good.
Right.
So being called a bum was a great insult, but
still is. I mean, unless there's a Garner after it, but you know, it still is.
it still is. It doesn't quite carry the weight that it once was, but the chant.
That's
still
true. We've gotten a lot more crass throughout the decades. That's true. Speaking of two guys that aren't bums, Stanton and Judge. How's this?
Oh, those guys are not bums at all. Those guys are scary, and they're going to be protecting each other in the Yankees' already scary, record-breaking home run hitting lineup.
The new Bronx Bombers?
Oh, man. Those guys... not as teammates last year, they
put up some pretty good numbers.
Yeah, 111 home runs.
111
between
home
them.
Runs. Yeah,
that's just crazy. On base percentage, .399. Slugging percentage combined, .629. And but 27.1 strikeout percentage.
That's right. That's pretty big. And now they've been compared to Mantle and Maris, the 61 season, of course.
Right.
Where they collectively hit 115 home runs between the two of them, more than Stanton Judge. 409 OBP, better than Stan Judge. 651 slugging, again, better. 178 weighted runs created, as opposed to 164. And what was the Stan Judge strikeout percentage rate? What was that again?
27.1
strikeout rate. Maris Mantle, 13%. It's a big difference.
It is a big difference. It was
Who I'd rather have on my team. But yeah. It was 61, so you know.
It was a different era.
They were protecting each other, yeah.
Right. So Mantle hit behind Maris.
Yeah. So we'll see. Maybe we'll have this conversation in exactly 1 year and see what they did, what they can do. Verlander doesn't seem impressed. You see, he's because everybody's talking about them. He's like, hey, we're still the champions. We're still the ones to beat. And I think he's right. I still think Astros as a team maybe are better.
Yeah, they're defending champions until the World Series starts next year.
But, you know, the ALCS was not a... It was not a slam dunk, to cross-reference sports here.
No.
It was not easy for them. Had the home field advantage been in New York, I think we might have seen a different pennant winner right there.
They just got killed in New York. It's quite possible.
It's like they didn't even show up.
It's quite possible.
It's very possible. So, and now with the addition of Stanton, I mean, what, you know, that's...
It's scary.
It does seem kind of scary. I was thinking about, though, I really don't like John Sterling, and I know I'm not alone. I'm not a Yankee fan, but, you know, the Yankee announcer, all rise for the Judge. He's got all these ridiculous home run signatures, right? But what's he going to call Stanton, you know? He's got bye-bye birdie when Greg Bird hits a home run, all this crap.
I don't know.
What's Stanton's going to be? I don't know. It's hard to rhyme Stanton. I mean, if you left his name at Mike, like it used to be, instead of Giancarlo, it might have been easier. But Giancarlo is not going to be easy either. I don't know. I was just musing that. We'll see. I guess we'll see pretty soon. But
yeah, a little bit more than a month and a half.
John Sterling. Sorry, East Coast listeners. I can't do it. He's not as bad as the White Sox guy. I don't even know what the White... What's his... I can't stand
this is something like, put it on the board.
Jesus, it's the worst. It's seriously awful. That's terrible for me. He gone. I can't do it. I can't. It's like every time, man, come on. Every single time.
Well, you were a little bit spoiled too, listening to Vin Scully.
Right.
And that's really, really hard to compete with.
It's impossible to compete with across any sport. That's true. That is true. I have been spoiled my entire life, and now it's just I'm in a deep hole of depression. Now all I have to do, all I have is just the making fun of other sports teams announcers. But I don't know.
That's an important thing to do.
Stanton goes batting. I see. I can't. I mean, what's he going to do? He's probably struggling with this. He probably doesn't know what the hell he's going to say. And what, you know, Mike Stanton. I still think of him as Mike Stanton. I don't know what this Giancarlo thing came out of nowhere, but you know, what do you? It's like Melvin Upton. Like BJ Upton wasn't that great. He was good for striking out 200 times a year, but you know, he got some stolen bases, and you know, he had a little pop, and he could hit for decent average. Ever since he changed his name to Melvin, it's just who? He's gone. Nobody cares. I don't know. He got way worse. Don't change your name. Stick to your name. Especially if your name is Tug McGraw. That's you got to stick with that.
One of those classic names.
Although
famous son as well. So.
Yeah.
If you're a country music fan at all. But
that's pop country. That's not country. Let's not get into that. But you know what? It's okay.
Angry emails too.
Please. Please. I don't mind. The Washington Nationals, some notable offseason transactions. They got Howie Kendrick, Matt Adams, the right-handed pitcher Kinsler. But they are losing catcher Lobatone. They're losing Adam Lind. They're losing Steven Drew, Ryan Rayburn, Alejandro Diaza, Jason Wirth, and Oliver Perez. Oh, yeah, and Joe Blanton and Matt Albers. So, you know, but luckily Scott Boras represents over half of the Nationals' total payroll, 55.7%, and one of his clients, Jake Arrieta. So, oh, yeah, and Eric Hosmer. Oh, yeah, and J.D. Martinez. and Carlos Gonzalez and Carlos Gomez. So he has very close ties with the Nationals. Is there any chance Nationals get Arrieta and then have the best starting rotation in baseball?
I'm sure there is a chance. Whether or not the Nationals really will give Arrieta what he wants.
Right.
I think he wants something like 6 or 7 years. And
yeah, that's crazy.
An untold amount of millions of dollars.
If you're Arrieta, and I know you're not, but if you are, wouldn't you be willing to take a little bit of a pay cut to be on a team that's a huge contender to win the pennant, the Nationals? I mean, they're not going to be the Dodgers, but, you know, they're at least a pretty big contender. I think better than the Cubs, so he shouldn't be crying over not being a Cub again. But, I mean, where else is he going to go? American League?
I don't know. I think that, you know, what we have a big free agent class coming out at the end of next year. The rumor is that all the teams who have not signed the big free agents this year are saving up for next year because that's going to be huge.
And the Nationals are going to have to drop a lot of coin to retain Bryce Harper next year.
Right, if they're going to be able to at all. He's certainly the biggest prize of free agency next year.
He will get a record-breaking contract, no doubt.
Would it behoove Arrieta, I know that he wants the security of the long-term deal. Would it behoove him to take a huge dollar amount for 1 year with the Nationals?
I mean, see
how it works out. And
but they're not going to be able to pay him the next year, and I think he knows that. But, I mean, just as a player standpoint, not as a person, but as a player, isn't your goal to win the World Series? Shouldn't that be your only goal?
It should be.
It should be.
It should be.
Yeah.
But players and people in general are motivated by money. And money is huge. And, yeah, it's nice to get the championship, get the ring, but, you know.
See, I don't know. If there's a but after that, then I don't like you as a player. If you're not trying to win, go yourself, all right? And Arrieta, I don't know, man. I think the Cubs had shared my sentiment with him. Like, yeah, we'd love to have him. He's a great pitcher, but we'd rather have Darvish. And if I was the owner of a team, I would rather have Darvish too, because Darvish is still he's not old. I mean, he's not young, but his career has always been high. He's always pitched at a high level. Arrieta got good quick, but he was pretty bad the first few years of his career. And
he figured something out. And
he figured something out.
Had a couple magical years.
Or he got one pitch that guys weren't used to, and because the last couple years we've seen his ERA slowly go back up to where it should be, from where it was a couple years ago. And he's not really fooling guys anymore. His strikeout rate isn't nearly what Darvish's is. I don't know. He's got a few health issues. He's definitely a great pitcher. I don't know if he's an ace anymore. And Darvish, even though he obviously had to shit the bed in the World Series, he's still, and being a Dodger fan, you know, that's very hard for me to say because I'm still shell-shocked by those two horrendous starts. But the guy, in my opinion, still is better than Jake Arrieta. And I think the Cubs agree with me because they offered him six-year 126 mil. Yeah, and I'm sure they probably were thinking about or maybe offered something similar to Arrieta. Maybe he didn't take it. I don't know. Or maybe they didn't. Maybe they didn't give him that much because they're like, well, we'll take you if we can get you, but we're not going to – we're really not going to fight that hard because we still have Darvish right here. You know, I don't know.
I think the more that you wait on these things, the less chance that you're going to have. But in terms of the Dodgers and Darvish, I'm really surprised that there wasn't more of a public display of trying to re-sign Darvish themselves.
You're not surprised?
I am surprised. I am surprised that the Dodgers...
I'm not surprised.
You know, if you, without the two World Series starts, the rest of his postseason performance were really good.
He did
good.
Have a great postseason.
You have to give credit to the Astros because they somehow got in their head. They figured something out to hit.
Yeah, he was tipping his pitches. Yeah,
and that is not unusual in Darvish's history either. Right. That he had that.
And they took full advantage of that, and you know what? I mean, you can't blame him really. I don't know. Are the Astros as good as they seem? I don't know. That's a good question. But I still think. But I'm not surprised though that the Dodgers. I'm sure the Dodgers made him a decent offer, but I'm not surprised that publicly they weren't really going after him because, man, that's still fresh in all of our brains. It's still fresh in all of our memories. Darvish just going out there dropping a huge egg twice when it really mattered. You know, there would be a lot of questions if they gave him a lot of money. Really? You're going to bring him back?
It's potentially a lot of wins during the regular season.
It's true. Dodgers rotation still looking great with or without Darvish. And, you know, look, the Dodgers made it most of the season without Darvish. So it wasn't like he was a fulcrum in that lineup. He really wasn't. It was a nice addition at the end. But anyway, I don't know. We'll see. Arrieta, I don't know. I'm not that excited anymore. I am kind of excited to see Darvish in a Cubs uniform, see how he does there. I'm sure he'll do really well. I prefer Darvish to be in the American League, but you know, what are you going to do?
Don't we all?
Yeah. Well, which leads me to another thing in terms of JD Martinez and fantasy wise, I'd love to see him in Arizona. Personally, as a fan of the NL West. I do not want to see him in Arizona, but there was news coming out yesterday about Arizona Diamondbacks storing their balls in a humidor room, a room with controlled humidity.
Very similar to Colorado, in fact that it's a higher elevation and very, very dry air. The balls tend to drive out, which makes them lighter, slicker. Makes it harder, the slickness. I know that's one of the biggest complaints that the pitchers have had is that the balls are really difficult to grip because they're so slick in Arizona because they're so dry.
And the balls don't break in that air either, not nearly as much.
Well, not nearly as much. It's much harder to get a good breaking ball going, so the balls tend to fly straighter towards the plate and therefore farther off the bat.
But, you know, Chase Field is not Coors Field. By any means,
it's not.
And I know elevation; it's a little high up there, but it's
not Coors Field. It's a lot different dimensions, also.
Right, and Coors Field, you know, the old argument, or it's not even old; it's still a current argument, is that if anything, they need to bring the fences in Coors Field because their outfield is just too big, and it seems counterintuitive, but it actually would probably create fewer runs if they did that. Guys wouldn't get as many doubles as they do now, which is astronomical. But okay, Chase Field. Compared to Coors, it's still not close. I mean, Chase Field ranked 8th in Major League Baseball in runs last season. 8th. Behind Coors, behind the Rangers, behind Comerica Park, behind Target Field, even behind the Coliseum, which has traditionally seemed to be a pitcher's park in Oakland, and Great American Ballpark, and Wrigley. You know, it ranked 11th in home runs. So Chase Field doesn't have this overwhelming advantage. I mean, there is some. The league average slash last year was 255, 324, 426, while the Chase slash was 256, 327, 449. So the difference is negligible, in my opinion. I think it's going to make Zach Greinke really happy. It's going to make Robbie Ray really happy. But how does this affect JD Martinez's decision-making going into this spring training?
That's a very good question. I think that definitely will factor into it. I think that probably the reason why he hasn't made his final choice of where he wants to go for the year is because of this.
It's interesting because I was thinking up until yesterday, the days leading up to yesterday, JD Martinez was talking with Arizona a lot more. At least it seemed like, and he was even FaceTiming with like Goldschmidt and The guys want him back, you know.
Well, yeah,
the Arizona wants him back.
He makes the entire lineup there in Arizona much, much stronger. I agree with you. Fantasy, JD in Arizona is great. As an NL West fan, well, I like to see the good hitters play, and if he's with the Diamondbacks, I'll get to see him hit more.
Yeah.
Hopefully. The times that the Giants and the Diamondbacks play, some good hitters to watch.
Is it necessary? And this is also a question, though. Can any ballpark do this? I mean, it seems a little weird that just have this autonomous control over balls. I mean, I don't want to bring up Deflategate in the NFL, but it seems very similar. Like, what are the rules? At what percent humidity are they being stored at? And if they get balls in spring and they don't use them until August or so, where were those balls kept? And how are they, you know, what's... How do they determine what the exact right density and humidity and how long you store the balls in these rooms?
I think you have...
It can affect it. It just seems crazy. It seems like there are no governing rules against this and that any team can just start doing this now. Like, okay, so now you got you got Max Scherzer coming in to Arizona. All right, we're going to crank the humidity up on these balls, you know. Let's make sure these balls stay in the park, you know. Or the opposite, maybe. You know, maybe you turn it off and so you can let the balls fly against Scherzer, you know? It seems crazy to me. It just seems a little weird. In Colorado, it's a necessity. I get that. But, you know, everywhere else, I mean, other parks can make that claim too. Giants can maybe start freezing the balls because the park is too big. And, you know, home runs are always fewest there. I don't know. It's weird to me. It doesn't really make any sense.
It's something that might need to be addressed going forward, but there's only going to be two teams that are doing it. I guess the room at Coors Field is kept at about 70 degrees and 50% humidity.
Right. I think that's what they're talking about with Arizona, 50%.
Which would make sense. As far as the other teams, Arizona is the desert. It's very, very dry out there. So it makes sense.
So is L.A.
But the relative humidity in L.A., I can guarantee you, is...
It is closer to the ocean. Yeah,
is much higher than in Arizona.
Right. No, it is.
And in some places in the Midwest, you get, you know, regular throughout the summer. You're talking 80% plus relative humidity. Maybe they put in the balls in the humidifier to keep them drier.
I don't know about that.
You know, the balls in Cincinnati, the balls in Cincinnati fly out of that park.
Yeah.
Why? Not because of humidity and elevation.
Well, that super low porch, and it's also the balls are, yeah, you know, those. That park is a very, very friendly.
Cincinnati is a humid place. Players that go there in July and August, they complain about the humidity and the bugs and all these things. Same with St. Louis, is that these characteristics of the ballpark and the environment in which the ballpark is in affect the weight and the feel of the ball itself.
Most definitely.
So the should there be a standard? All balls be kept in a humidor?
Yeah.
Across all? Every park has a room that is kept at 70 degrees and 50% humidity across baseball so that the baseball has the exact same feel at the start of the game no matter where you are in the league and no matter what teams are playing.
Yeah.
And where?
Is that a crazy request? I mean, I know that they all use the same mud to mud up every ball before every game. That's all taken care of. So everything else is strictly guarded.
All the balls are made in the same place by the same people.
Yeah. So it makes sense that, there should be uniform rules for
storing
all across baseball. Yeah, I mean, there is with football, right, in terms of air pressure and weight for those balls. In baseball, I mean, that's a huge difference, you know. And again, I don't know. I'm not really convinced that the offensive numbers in Arizona are that bad. That being said, if JD does go to Arizona, I'll be happy with that. But JD seems to have, you know, power that doesn't really seem to be controlled by any park. You know, he went to Dodger Stadium last year, one of the most pitcher friendly parks in baseball. Hit 4 home runs in one game. I mean, the guy is immune to park statistics. So whether or not this will even hurt him, I don't know. Goldschmidt, same thing. You know, the guy rakes. But then again, I don't know, because if they do what they did in Coors Field in Arizona, there is going to be a huge drop.
Yeah,
much bigger than Colorado.
20% in Colorado, 22% less home runs after the
right.
after the humidor was in place.
Yeah, and they're saying in if they do this in Arizona, it could be up to 50%. Literally up wow. to 50%. That is insane because it's not Coors Field, it's not the mountains, it's not a mile high. It's different. It's and the again, I mean just those total number of runs that we were just talking about. It's they're not even in the top 5. So why are they even debating this? I don't know. And again, I'm more concerned about can any team do this now? I mean, do you have to have a certain elevation, a certain dryness in the air? What about certain days? I mean, it just seems crazy. It seems like they're opening up Pandora's box and they're not really going to be able to close it anytime soon. I don't know. But or maybe this has to do with Manfred's pace of play BS and try to get the scores lower to get the game shorter. I can't even deal with that. Let's move on because this is just going to upset me even more. we saw Bud Norris agrees to deal with the Cardinals. You know, he had a great first half last season with the Angels. Then he hurt his knee and then it all went downhill. But the guy's got some pretty good potential, so that seems to be a pretty big thing for the Cardinals. We'll see. Reese Hoskins will be moving to left field after Philadelphia signed Carlos Santana. Who would be their everyday first baseman. That'll be interesting. Another thing in terms of that, if we're going to still talk about rumors, Eric Hosmer, maybe to San Diego?
That would be a great move for San Diego. Great move for San Diego. I think he would be a good fit there. And they're already talking about like adjusting their lineup to make room for him at first base.
Yeah, right. So supposedly Will Myers has expressed enthusiasm and supposedly gained more than 20 pounds of muscle. And is willing to play in the outfield.
Good for him.
He's already said that. So, and the Padres have supposedly hosted Hosmer for multiple visits and expect to start the season with the payroll of, get this, $70 million for the Padres. I think they can afford him. USA Today report last month put a 7-year offer from the Royals at $147 million and a competing 7-year proposal from the Padres at $140 million. Whether these are accurate or not remain to be seen. But San Diego, I know, is rearing up to start.
They say, not being really the laughing stock of the National
by
League 2019.
West. 2019. Although, you know, we'll see. But Hosmer at first base there. Will Myers bulks up a little bit, starts hitting a little bit more for average and getting on base more. He still has a lot of pop. Who knows? They need a lot of help in pitching. But this would be a great first step for them. Put Hosmer in a completely different league, a completely different area. You know, I don't know. I think that'd be good for them. It'd be good for the National League West. They're still not going to be able to compete with the likes of the Dodgers in Arizona. Oh, yeah, and Colorado, and maybe the Giants. We'll see. which leads us to the new Pecota projections. Are you... So the new baseball prospectus came out. Thank God. That means it's time for baseball season once again. Makes me very, very, very happy. But the new projections for win-losses... by teams are in. New York Yankees on top of the East with 96-66. Indians, no surprise, on top. Central, 97-65. Houston Astros, again, no surprise. They're projected at 99-63. Going to the National League, the Nationals are on top, 89-73. Chicago with the Central, 89-73. And the Dodgers in the West, 99 wins and 63 losses projected. That's insane. I've never seen any
so
team get projected 99.
They're projecting something very similar to what we saw last year.
Yeah. I mean, they usually go with like the mean, and it's usually very conservative. And, I mean, I guess taking 5 games away from the Dodgers is more conservative than not, but it's still not conservative. I mean, yeah, of course, the Dodgers won 104 games. 99 projected wins. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I love it. I love these projections. but and again, all the top teams don't seem a surprise. The win-loss total, you could argue. But I'm more surprised with the Seattle Mariners topping the Angels. The Mariners are looking at 83-79, and the Angels are looking at 80-82. I think the Angels are good for at least 8 or 9 more wins than that. I think they'll be above 500.
the issue with both of these teams, the Mariners and the Angels, are their pitching. They both have questions in their pitching staff. What is going to happen?
Right.
How good will Ohtani be? How good will Felix Hernandez be?
Right.
These are questions that will make or break the seasons for these teams. The Angels have a great lineup. Will their new Japanese toy and their pitching rotation really make that big of a difference? Will King Felix come back as the king in Seattle? If he does, they may have a really good year.
No, they may
sneak up on some people. If Felix is Felix, watch out for the Mariners.
Right.
But these are the question marks. That's why they're projected so low, is because we just don't know who's going to show up pitching for these teams.
Yeah, and I don't think King Felix will ever be King Felix ever again. Maybe Prince Regent or something, but I don't know. Look, I love King Felix. He won me a championship a few years ago. I mean, you know, I love the guy. When he's good, he's one of the best in baseball, easily. But again, you know, the recent injuries and his velocity has been just steadily decreasing ever since. And if he doesn't have that, he's not really fooling guys, you know. But I don't know. We'll see. And I do like the Oakland Athletics aren't dead last all on their own. They're projected to win 77-85, same projected as the Texas Rangers. So, you know, that should be good. The A's have a young staff. They got Chris Bryan back. You know, they also have Who's their prospect? AJ Puk. I don't know how to pronounce it. P-U-K. It's kind of a tragic last name. But, I mean, he at Class A, Double A last year, his strikeout per nine rate was 13.2. It's pretty insane. 1.24 whip as a starter. I mean, so there's going to be a lot of... It'll be fun to see if and when he does come up. A's, you know, I mean, what can you say? You know, you're not going to shit a brick with excitement, but I don't know. It'll be fun to watch. I just like that they're not totally out of it in terms of the pagoda projections.
Sure.
They're not in it by any means, but, you know, they're not going to have the worst record in baseball. Looks like the Kansas City Royals are projected, along with the Miami Marlins, to have the worst record in baseball with 66 wins.
With the Royals, it depends on what they do with their two big free agents. If they can keep either one of them, those numbers likely go up. You got Moustakas and Hosmer. Right. Mm-hmm. They're on the corners. What are they going to do if they don't get either of those guys back?
These projections will probably be correct if they don't.
Well, okay, so 99 wins for the Dodgers. What about the rest of the National League West? Is it going to be tighter than last year?
This is another area of contention that I can't agree with the Pagoda projections, because they have Arizona waiting 86. Okay, that's fine in second place. In third place, they have the Giants, though, ahead of the Rockies. Giants, they have for 84 and 78. Rockies, they have 78 and 84. Now, I mean, come on, I'm speechless. I don't know. I can't make sense of that.
Well, I believe last year for the Giants was an anomaly.
They made hate saying that they made the postseason. They made the one game playoff, but still, Rockies did. You know,
Rockies did come up. They probably won't slide that much.
They're the same team, but for the most part, yeah.
You know, if the Giants are better, they will lose more games because the Giants will beat them.
That's
more
true.
Games.
That's
just
true.
On those two teams alone, it's going to change those numbers from last year just a little bit.
I guess the Giants record isn't as inflated as it might seem, because they will have Bumgarner back. They will have a completely different lineup in terms of hitting. So
They will hit more home runs this year. They will win more games last year. Well,
yeah. So they're not going to lose 99 games.
If not, there's a problem.
And also, Carlos Gonzalez is a free agent. So Rockies may or may not have him back. I love Cargo. I think Cargo's...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when he was good, he was the best in the game. There's
Cargon, awesome.
Few better in baseball.
Awesome hitter to watch.
And we'll see. You know, he's got a lot of time to rest. He's healing. He says he feels great. I hope he does. And it'll be interesting to see where he goes. I'd like to see him in Colorado again just for his sake, you know, maybe help him out a little bit. But who knows? Maybe a change of scenery isn't bad. You know, he's, again, the kind of guy that I'm sure he does better at Coors Field, but he can play anywhere. I mean, he rakes. Again, he hasn't had the best couple of seasons, although two years ago he was great. He won me a championship, so I can't complain. You know, he had like 30-something home runs after the All-Star break. It was insane. Another Scott Boras client, so, you know, who knows? We'll see. Maybe Nationals are losing Jason Wirth. Maybe they get Cargo on the cheap. I don't know. Be interesting to see.
Scott Boras controlling all these players. When will all these pieces fall into place? When will all these players get signed?
When he stops being so damn greedy. I don't know. I don't want to say that because I want the players to get what they deserve. But at the same time, if it's going to start affecting the integrity of the game, that guy needs to relax and just, you know, quit chirping in players' ears. I don't know any of this. This is all conjecture. I don't know if any of this is what's going on. We'll see. But you said that there is in Florida, they do.
Yeah, there is a camp for the unsigned free agents at this point that haven't otherwise been invited to any camps. Mm-hmm. There is reportedly at least 15 players, and there are no medias allowed.
No media allowed.
Really? So what they're
doing.
So
how do we even know that this exists? Maybe this
I don't know. Well, maybe scouts, you would think, but apparently there was a Kansas City Royals scout that was there that was kicked out of the facility.
A scout was kicked out.
Right.
Well,
so
what's the point? That seems crazy to me.
You want to be able to showcase your talents, see what, you know, show everyone what you got, something similar to what Tim Lincecum is doing today as we speak,
right.
Even it possibly
showcase showdown.
Showcase showdown for big time Timmy Jim, seeing what he's got left for a number of teams, including the Yankees, the Angels, the Giants, the Dodgers, the
Angels
Padres.
Aren't gonna make that mistake again. They already lost $2.5 million on that on that showcase in 2016. I don't think they're gonna do that again.
Yeah, that wasn't good for them or Timmy, but it should be interesting to see what comes of that. What comes of all these unassigned free agents.
Giants could use him in the pen.
Yeah.
He's a hometown favorite, you know.
He most definitely is.
And I'm sure he's got gas. We touched on that before. There were some unconfirmed reports that he's hitting 96. I mean, he's pitching as we speak right now. So I'm sure by the time you hear this, you'll be able to find some stats or something on what happened.
Someone
today.
Will have
we'll
reported on what they saw, what they liked, what they didn't like.
Any fantasy value? I don't think so. I don't know. But, you know, who knows? We'll see. Maybe. Maybe.
In theory, anybody who makes a major league roster has some potential fantasy value, right?
No. I don't think so. But, you know, if he is in, say, the American League Central as a pitcher, he might do all right because it's a pretty weak division out there. I don't know. We'll see. Not too crazy. I'm not going to be holding my breath on Tim Lincecum going anywhere, but maybe he should get Scott Boras as his manager, as his agent.
Well, I don't know. It could end up being that Scott Boras has enough unsigned free agents to create his own.
He's got enough on his plate right now. Yeah, that's true.
he can probably form his own expansion team with the number of players that he's got.
Maybe that's what's going on in Florida. Maybe he's talking about. Well, speaking of expansion, it sounds crazy, I know, but there is a little bit of that in the air.
Yeah, there is a little bit. We've been talking about.
Well, we have heard that the Tampa Bay Rays, Tampa Bay Devil Rays, as I like to call them, as they should be called, are going to be getting a new stadium in, looks like, 2020.
Oh, that's good news. No one liked the Trop.
That's right, yeah. They are going to be in the proposed site is Ybor City, which I guess is a sort of an old town across. So it'll still be in Tampa, but I guess it's easier to get to because where they are now in St. Petersburg, it's very it's hard to get to by car. There's only like one bridge, I guess, to get there, and it probably deters a lot of people. They have by far the lowest turnout of any park in baseball. It's just over 15,000 a game.
This is a somewhat similar situation to Atlanta and why they ultimately moved from Turner Field.
Oh, okay.
Because Turner Field was on the south side of the city, and for the most of the fans going to the games were on the north side, and getting through downtown Atlanta at rush hour was deterring a lot of people from going to the game. That so they sense. Built a new one on the north side, presumably be easier for people to get to by game time. So
yeah, and Turner Field was pretty old and decrepit. And
old. It was built in 96 for the Olympics.
Was it built in 96?
It was built. It was built for the.
It was a gross stadium.
It was built for the Olympics. It was built for the Olympics in 96, and then after the Olympics, it was converted into baseball only. Replaced Atlanta Fulton County Stadium was across the parking lot from that old stadium there. The plaque still exists somewhere out there where number 715 landed. Ooh, for right. Hammer and Hank.
That's right. Well, either way, I can't see the Rays losing on this. Maybe the taxpayers will be losing, I'm sure. But Tropicana Field is awful. I mean, aside from maybe Marlins Park, which both happen to be in the same state, just awful, terrible, I mean, they have the rafters up there, you know, in Tropicana, where if it hits it, there's different rules in Tropicana.
Right, depending on where it hits and where it falls.
It's so
and
dumb. Sometimes the ball never comes down. What was that one with the? I forget who it was. He's trying to catch the fly ball, and then you see him ducking, and then he's just on the ground ducking because he doesn't know where it is, and the ball never comes down. And it's just so.
Well, we'll see if we can find that video. We'll post it on Facebook.
Ridiculous. Anyway, we'll see. It'll probably be 2020. It's looking like, but you know, good for them. Hopefully, it helps them a little.
That's a potential move. But what about any potential expansion?
Right.
Are there going to be two new teams anytime soon?
Well, I think they want to make sure the Rays get their park first. So maybe in 2020 we'll see about this expansion. I don't know.
Would Montreal get their team back? Where else would you?
I don't think they're going to go international ever again. I don't think we'll ever see baseball in Canada again.
No, except for the Blue Jays.
Well, right, yeah, and even their days might be.
What about Mexico City? Mexico City is huge, and yeah. They got a big baseball crowd in
yeah,
Mexico.
Yeah, that's a lot like Vegas. Like, do you really want your team to be going to Mexico City three times a year? I don't know.
It's not that far out of the way.
It's not that close. I mean, you might as well put a team in Hawaii. That would make just as much sense. At least they'd be using the U.S. dollar. See, I don't know. This whole playing in Canada, playing in Mexico, I don't get it. If I was Canadian, I'd be pissed if they were when they took the Expos. And it is kind of nice to see. And to see Toronto isn't that far from New York, so it's not crazy. But Montreal
isn't that far from New York either.
That's true. Yeah.
When I was in Montreal about 3 years ago, I met a few fans who really missed baseball and wanted
Expos hats.
Definitely saw Expos hats. Nice. Walking around the city.
I like it. That's cool. No, it is cool, and it is good for them. I know that when Toronto is even remotely good, they're selling out Rogers Stadium or Rogers Center.
Yeah,
it's fine. Do we need more teams? Do we need the expansion? I mean, there are, I guess, more and more guys. Maybe it's just gonna hurt my brain for fantasy purposes. This is just too much. I watch a lot of baseball as it is. You throw two more teams in the mix. I don't know. Or maybe teams going from American to National, National to American. I don't know. I don't know if we're gonna see that again. But oh well.
We may.
So Ybor City. Which will lead us to last week's trivia question.
Last week's trivia question was, who was the last pitcher to hit a walk-off home run?
Last pitcher to hit a walk-off home run. Wow. All righty, we'll go to the emails here. Not a lot of guesses on this one. This is a very
this is a tricky one. This was going back a few years, for sure. Very West Coast bias, but because it did happen on the West Coast.
Yeah. So we have Aaron from Azusa, SoCal. Thank you for listening. Giovanni Gallardo.
Giovanni Gallardo. No, that's an interesting guess, but no, it's that is incorrect.
He has some home runs in his day. Yeah, that's not a bad guess. That's better than my guess. I had no idea, actually.
But a walk-off home run is certainly a rare thing and much, much rarer for a pitcher. Because
keep going.
Well, so it has to. It most likely would be a reliever.
Mm-hmm.
Most likely.
That's true.
I mean, you know, how many relievers know who like hit home runs in any situation, let alone end the game?
Is that a big hint? Because I thought I had the answer in my head, but no. I was going to say Carlos Zambrano.
Carlos Zambrano, no you have not, to go back okay. earlier than that.
Yeah. All right, well, we're all striking out over here. what is the answer?
You have to go back to 1986.
Oh, okay.
1986 game in San Diego played between the Padres and the Giants was lefty reliever Craig Lefferts.
Craig Lefferts, how dare you?
Craig Lefferts hit a walk-off home run. I don't have the date of the game right in front of me, but it was hit off of pitcher Giants closer Greg Minton. Served it up. So that was that question, but thank you for your guess and for the next
what do you got for us next week?
Another West Coast bias question. Who were the last pair of teammates to finish 1 and 2 in home runs for the entire major leagues?
Last teammates to finish 1st and 2nd in home runs
for the entire league, not the NL, not the AOL, but
for all of Major League Baseball,
wow. Finishing 1 and 2,
huh.
Last pair of teammates to
Ooh,
do that.
Actually, okay, I have a couple ideas here. All right, well, I'm going to save it. I'll save it for next week.
All right.
This one might be doable, so please email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com or drop a comment on Facebook, West Coast Bias Show. Is it West Coast?
West Coast Bias Baseball Podcast at Facebook.
Yeah. Or on the Podomatic website or on iTunes. Drop a comment. We're everywhere now, so...
yes, please like, share us, give us a rating, email us, drop a comment, let us know what we're doing, what you'd like to hear. As spring training games begin to start next week, we will be talking more about specific players and more of a fantasy focus, getting your roster together, building your draft, and... Yeah, actually have some actual baseball to talk about, not just conjecture, right. Rumors, and random facts that we can find.
And if the case has been what it has been lately, as soon as you hear this episode, or before this even gets posted, Arrieta will probably be signed, Hosmer will probably be signed. So we'll see. Sorry if this is old hat, but we will be back, and we will have a little bit more baseball for you. And it's coming. It's coming soon.
It is. So thank you for listening once again. Baseball is life, and the rest is just details. I'm Samuel Paul.
I am Adam Nelson.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Go watch some baseball. Roses at the vet, Rusty again is a Met, and the great Alexander is pitching again in Washington. I'm talking baseball, like Reggie Quees and Barry, talking baseball. Lord Perry, Seaver, Garvey, Schmidt, and Vida Blue. If Cooperstown is calling, it's no fluke. They'll be with Will.